the Newcastle County Council Executive Committee meeting Tuesday, March the 10th, 4 p.m., 8th floor, Council Building, City County Building. Need approval minutes. Before we do that, I'll take roll. Council people present: Kilpatrick, Attackett, Weiner, Cartier, Diller, and Retta, and my aide, Anthony DeFurry, and I'm President Chris Bullock. Approval of minutes, please.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Also joining us, Councilmember Smiling.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Agenda item number three, briefing by outside counsel on legal employment issues, employment handbook revisions, and division and discussion, rather, and potential decision by counsel on issues raised. Before we hear from outside counsel who's here, to ask Bess if she would like to make a statement, open statement, please. Bess Gardner.
Last year, council authorized retention of an outside labor law attorney to review our handbook and our personnel policies. Mr. Cronin was selected and has, in fact, reviewed our handbook in conjunction with the audit. And I, along with our council to council, met with Mr. Cronin, and he has identified some areas of concern and is here today to discuss that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Sure. Mr. Cronin, Councilman, would you
certainly
please defer? Thank you so much. Mr. Cronin, welcome to our meeting.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Let me just give you a little background on myself so you can sort of understand my perspective with respect to employment issues. My name is Larry Cronin. I've spent much of the last 30 years here in Wilmington litigating employment disputes. And I represent, unlike a lot of my colleagues, I represent both employees and I represent management. I spent the first 5 years working in the public sector, working for the city and the state of Delaware. In the last 25 years, I've been in private practice representing employees and management. Probably about 75% of my time is devoted to employment law, not just litigation, but also spending substantial time working with employers to try to avoid litigation. As some of you may know, employment litigation can be extremely expensive, extremely disruptive to any organization, and it's something that is a central part of my practice. I try to counsel clients with respect to looking ahead to issues that could result in litigation so as to avoid them. One of the things that I do as part of that is I review handbooks to see if there are particular issues with respect to handbooks and issues that are in them. And that's how I came to be here today. Several months ago when I first sat down with Ms. Gardner and Ms. Doolin, we went through the handbook and sort of went through it in kind of a traditional way in terms of, well, how can we tighten up certain procedures? How can we make sure that it's in compliance with recent law changes? But as I got deeper into the process, I recognized what I think is a more significant problem that I think is also touched on in the auditor's report that I saw. And as part of the process, in addition to the manual, what I looked at were some of the job descriptions. And specifically, one job description that caused me concern was the one for the legislative aides. And the reason that it caused me concern was the fact that it's somewhat unusual in that it has this dual reporting, where you have your legislative aides, which report to each of you as council members, while also reporting to the council clerk. The problem you have when you have a dual reporting structure like that is that it can sometimes lead to uneven application of the rules. And what it does is that it creates an unintended legal exposure to you as an entity and to you individually. And this is, however, as I will explain in a minute, a problem that can be pretty easily addressed with really just one basic correction. But this dual reporting can lead to what I view as two real problems. Number one, low morale, especially when you have people working in close proximity to each other. And number two, an increase in discrimination claims, which is where the legal exposure issue comes into play. There are two basic rules that I tell all my employer clients with respect to the best ways to avoid litigation involving employment issues. The first is to consistently document problematic behavior of employees. If you don't write it down, it didn't exist. Now that issue really isn't before you today, but the second one is. And the second one is that you must have a system in place that makes sure that all of your employees, all of your similarly situated employees, are treated the same. If you don't have a system in place that accounts for that, you will end up with discrimination claims. You will end up with unhappy employees. And as a governmental entity, your exposure is greater than a lot of my private sector clients. I mean, private sector clients face a lot of the same anti-discrimination statutes that you all do. The federal Title VII, the ADA, the ADEA. But because you are in the public sector, you're also subject to being sued under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, which means that you can be sued individually, in addition to being sued as an entity. So, you know, even more so than is the case with private employment, it's important that you have a process in place that ensures equal treatment of all of your employees. As I said a few moments ago, there is what I see as a very easy fix to this that doesn't require a major restructuring or anything like that, that doesn't require you to give up control over the legislative aides that you've undoubtedly worked with for many, many years. But what it requires is basic restructuring so that there's somebody else who is the supervisor of the legislative aides, so that when issues do arise, if there are problems with attendance, if there are problems with, you know, coming in late, if there are problems like that, that they're being run through a single individual who can ensure that all of the employees are being treated the same. It's not something that takes away the involvement of the individual members of council and their relationships with their legislative aides, but rather it provides for somebody to have, as part of their job function, making sure that people who are working together are following the same rules and being held accountable to following those same rules. Now, one of the examples that I always like to give when I'm in this setting is to use my own law firm. I've been in the same law firm for 25 years. I've had the same legal assistant for 13 of those years. She's great, obviously. She's been with me that long. Obviously, she's doing a fine job. But if there are problems that arose with her, if she was late for work, or if there were other work issues, the way we are set up, you know, even though one of my partners and I are the ones who are giving her all of her work on a daily basis, if problems we have that done through the office manager, or addressed through the office manager, to ensure that all of our staff are treated the same. And while we will undoubtedly be involved, you know, if there are issues that result in a form of discipline against that individual, you know, we make sure that it's clear that all of our employees report to a single administrative person as their supervisor. And while the rest of us are certainly involved in participating and providing input, that ultimately they report to that individual to make sure that that individual makes sure that all the employees are treated the same. Does anybody have questions?
Before we open up for questions, I want to recognize Councilman Bell, Hollins, and Sheldon Street are present for the record. Council, you have any comments or questions? Mr. Street.
What's the genesis of this presentation and this conversation?
Council voted to authorize the retention of a labor law attorney to review the handbook. Council voted on that last year. So this is a result of the review by Mr. Cronin and his comments.
And in that authorization, did council ask for counsel or guidance as it relates to supervision of legislative aid?
That's a very good point.
Let me cut straight to the chase. I smell mischief. Okay? And the process was in place for the legislative aid, was in place long before I got in office. And it appears now, and I've raised it on other matters, that staff is getting to be more and more in charge. Council is repeatedly, constantly, in my opinion, giving deference to staff. Staff is running the government. Now, if you want to continue down this road, then follow his advice. But that's not what we say. And the problems that have arisen in the last 10 years have been the result of what we were accused of doing to somebody, and we handled one instance completely wrong. And I don't know what's going to happen with incidents that have happened supposedly or allegedly been handled, which that may or may not be the end of. But in my opinion, it's all covered. And what was clearly understood by every legislative aid from the inception, that is, you serve at the pleasure of the council person. And if that's the situation, they all know that, then I don't see where all this is relevant to that particular position and the particular authority of the council person. And again, the things that we've had to deal with in the last 10 years and 3 months that I've been on council have been allegations against individual council people. And I go back to, I smell mischief in terms of what has gotten us to this presentation today. Because there's been no discussion about the need to change supervision and authority and to put that in the hands of one person. And now, you say one thing at the beginning of employment, and you're going to turn around and change that now? I don't think it's a good idea. And I also think there's some mischief in on this floor that sooner or later, this council's going to have to deal with. Because right now, the staff's running us. We're not running the staff. Staff, you got staff folks doing what they want to do and running this government more so than this council.
Councilmember Diller and Councilmember Kilpatrick.
I'll yield to Janet and then I'll ask my question.
Councilman.
To address Councilman Street's question, Tim and I held personnel meetings, committee meetings, several times to go through the handbook when after we had the audit done on council, because there were a couple of things that were brought up in there that we thought maybe in looking at the handbook needed to be brought up to current times. And we had our 2 hour long meetings and 45 minute discussions on one point and never came to any position that where we could get a majority of people to say yes, let's change the wording to XYZ instead of ABC. So I thought that in the discussion in some of those committees that we said maybe the best course of action here would be to hire a labor law specialist, have him go through the handbook, say yes, this is antiquated, this isn't in a government setting, this is what should or should not take place. I mean, I came out of a government setting, I came out of private industry. I believe that they are two different entities. When you're here as a merit employee is one thing, an appointed employee is a totally different thing. Working for elected officials, one, a basis of one-to-one is different than having one chief of staff that doles out work. So I think that's where this came from, and ultimately we put out an RFP or whatever process we went through and hired Mr. Cronin to come in and look at the handbook. And I believe that the presentation today is just the culmination of the work that he did over the past couple of months.
Thank you for reminding us of those meetings. that you chaired or...
We will never forget.
Quite lengthy. Councilmember Smiley and Councilmember Street.
Mr. Crump, you reviewed the handbook.
Right.
Well, I guess my first question is this your presentation? Is there more?
No, I mean, this is the issue that...
So, okay, go ahead, please.
No, I mean, this was one issue that, I mean, as part of my review of any handbook, one of the things that I'm concerned about is it going to work? I mean, are the changes going to work? Is it going to be, you know, it's going to be enforced?
Okay, so you reviewed the entire handbook. The conclusion is, your suggestion is that we have a chief of staff.
Not necessarily, no. I think you should have one administrative person with that role.
Okay, so if council said, Ms. Gardner, from this point forward, your duties as outlined on the rules of council are your duties, and the council member will step aside when it comes to discipline, that achieves what you...
Yeah.
The only point I want to make is, if it comes to hiring a chief of staff, you got one no vote sitting right here. And you reviewed the whole handbook, and that's what you came up with. Quite honestly, sir, we just screwed council's budget for nothing.
If I could respond to, I mean, this...
Sure, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Okay. I mean, I've made a lot of changes, a lot of proposed changes to the handbook. This was one issue that, in discussions with the clerk and with the council, that was of sufficient importance to have me come in and talk about it. And it's simply because...
Well, we haven't been privy to that. Perhaps that would have been due diligence if council had been privy to that in advance of this.
Would to see the changes?
Councilmember Street and Councilmember Cartier.
Well, I'm gonna keep on saying it. This reeks of mischief. Okay, and the presentation about an employee handbook's not on the table. There's no presentation about the handbook. The only thing that's in the presentation is talking about change of supervision of legislative aid. What I resent as a member of this council is right now, this staff, the primary staff, they're controlled by one, no more than three people, and the rest of us can go pound sand. And the two, three folks who are controlling it, they've let them reverse roles. Folks are supposed to be working for us, are running this government. And if y'all choose as a council, will a council be the will of council? But I'm with Councilman Smiley. I hired her. I want a supervisor. And I want the say, the first say, the final say, and what transpired. And because other folks have done whatever they've done with their aides and got sued and all that, and folks been transferred here and transferred there, and that mischief hadn't been exposed, don't put me in it. And don't let the function and operation of my office be held hostage to somebody else's mischief and foolishness. Mm-hmm. And if y'all want to come, we ran for office. We got elected. You hire people, and then you turn around, and you give all your power to the folks that you hired to work for you, and let them go do what they want to do. Go bother who they want to bother, and by inference and innuendo, and operationally, they're running this government. They're running this council. So if you want to add on to it, add on to it.
Okay.
Councilmember Cartier.
It's a very practical issue. I'm glad you're addressing this. And I'll just preface my remarks by saying, you know, I don't think we necessarily have to hire more staff at all. But it's a very practical matter for me personally as a member of this council. You know, I'm not in here in the morning when the office opens. I'm not generally here when the office closes. I'm in and out, and my day is spent primarily with the things that I do, serving my constituents. I dictate to my aide the content of his work, but administratively, someone should be logging, you know, is the person showing up to work? And I would like to know if they're not, because they were hired by me to serve my people, and I want to make sure they're here doing the job that they were hired to do. Of course, you know, that means, for me, the role of the, you know, the clerk has been, and in the interview process, explicit. You know, if that person that I hire is not showing up to work, I want to know about it. So, I get your point, what you're saying, and I don't think it means the council has to surrender. I don't intend to surrender the work process of my aide to anybody, but someone needs to keep track of who's showing up when and where, and it's a practical issue. So I get what you're saying, and you know, point well taken.
Councilmember Dillard, then Hollins, and
Mr. Cronin, I don't want to make your head explode.
It will take a lot.
But you would.
But here's the question I have. You know, I've been on this council for 6 years. Same issues keep coming up. Same discussions keep going on and on. And one of the questions I have is, you know, most of us have districts other than in the city of Wilmington. Have you worked with governments that have models where you have contracted legislative aides that are handled by the council person in a, you know, where they're hiring, where they're doing the office? I mean, it's a decentralized situation. Does that put people more legally at risk than this situation? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it is a unique situation. It really is. And the only reason I raise the issue is because of that legal exposure, because of the fact that I think they can be fixed so easily.
Right.
You are, just like any other employer, and as I said, as a public sector employer, even more exposed in terms of potential lawsuits. So I think it helps to have some checks in place to make sure that people are being... required to follow the same rules.
So, can I just do a follow-up question? Yeah. So, if we're working in this situation, that's what you're recommending. But if you were working in a more decentralized situation, would there be other models that we could take a look at? Because, frankly, you know, my people are in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being here... Although my legislative aide does a very fine job and goes there when she needs to, quite frankly, for most of us, it would be better if our legislative aides were located, you know, closer to the people that they were serving.
Yeah.
I mean, the question of a decentralized system where the council office was actually in the council district and how that then looks, I don't know. I'm just, you know... It's 6 years, the same issues keep coming up, and quite frankly, I'm ready to be doing something different. That's all I got to say.
Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. From the briefing that you and I have heard and seen here, it's more about accountability. And I think the fact that we are in an open session here, it pretty much handicaps the attorney. And the conversation seems to me to be going in a direction that has to do with a lot of other legitimate concerns. But the issue of accountability to the taxpayers and the issue of fairness is the issue that struck me the most. And I feel that that's the issue that we need to get to in order to avoid the possibility and the probability of litigation. And to that point, I think it would be helpful to council members if they were to be given the facts that the attorney seems to be skirting around here in open session, and that would require us to go into an executive session, and it would require that we would have to basically discuss the competencies of some of our staff people. And at that point, I think it would be crystal clear, because right now I think that the effort that has gone into this, the money that has gone into this, has not been a real benefit, because it's not really going to the heart of the matter here that I believe the attorney is struggling to bring to our attention, because we are in an open session and we cannot have those discussions. So I'm going to suggest that we go into executive session to talk about the competencies, and then council members would have a very clear understanding of what's going on, rather than an understanding that's clouded because we're in an open session. And then I believe you'll be able to make a more educated decision about what we need to do to make certain that accountability is just that, and that it's across the board, that everyone is equally responsible to be accountable to this office and to the taxpayers. So a lot of the other issues that have been raised, I think perhaps there's a lot of merit to a lot of those issues, but that is not, those are not the issues that the attorney, in looking over the handbook, found to be as alarming as the issue of accountability that seems to be skirted around here, as opposed to being hit dead on and talk about this in a realistic way so that everybody understands. So from what the way this meeting is going right now, quite frankly, I'm not getting a real benefit, because I don't think that the attorney is able to say to us exactly what is really going on here that put us at risk for the probability of litigation.
Are you making a motion?
That we go into executive session, that we would, and I would have to make certain that the clerk is prepared to deal with these competencies so that we would know what's going on here, because we can sit here at the mode we're in right now for another, until it's time to go downstairs, without having a real understanding of the issue, and we'll talk about everything else except the real issue here. So in order for us to get to the real issue, I think we need to be in executive session and talk about the competencies of what's leading us to this position, so that it would be clear. Right now, we're all over the place. The clerk, are you ready to discuss competencies that would allow us to go into executive session? And I will yield to counsel to counsel to make certain that it is correct the way we're going into executive session, so that we can get to the heart of the matter.
Counsel.
Carol Dolan, counsel to counsel. The agenda lists the exact language from the Freedom of Information Act that would permit this body to go into executive session if it wishes.
We have one question.
I didn't see it.
Councilman Street, then we'll act on the motion.
Councilman Street. Before y'all vote, go into your little secret meeting. Because there's already obviously been some secret meetings. The staff people being talked about. In my opinion, accountability is covered, and that every council member has to sign off on the comp time sheet, and every council member has to sign off on the time sheet. And I don't care who you put in place to supervise who, nobody knows when she's going to a church to deliver a resolution for me on Saturday and she's going out of town. Nobody knows when she's standing up in civic association meetings at night for me. Nobody to account to there. And the comments that have been made are making my point for me. You get a report that says you question the time and how legislative aides are held accountable and who they're reporting to, and it's mighty funny that the person who raised that question apparently is accountable to nobody. And nobody's accounting for that person's time. But we're going to spend time and money changing, looking at the practicality of changing the policies and procedures as it relates to the folks who report directly to us. And as far as competencies is concerned, where have prior to today they've been raised, and who's raising them, and who is to question competency, and competency in doing what for who, when, in whose judgment? And obviously there's been, as I said, one or two folks meeting with staff and letting staff run this government. So now y'all going into your little secret meeting.
Is there a second on the motion?
I didn't make that motion. I said y'all going into your little secret meeting.
Yes. Second. Councilman Hollis made the motion. Okay. Go into executive second. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Everyone except council. Please leave the room.
I'm really bad.
This is
What we used to do. If you were 1 minute late.
We've concluded our executive sessions. No votes were taken. Councilman Weiner.
Yes, Mr. President, members of council. Will the chair entertain a motion? The answer is affirmative.
Yes.
Motion to advance accountability that this council hereby amend our handbook of Newcastle County Council consistent with the advice of our legal counsel, who will now promulgate a rule for our consideration.
Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Let the press figure that one out.
The ayes have it. Thank you. We shall move forward. Thank you, counsel.
No.
You promulgating now?
Promulgate means pro bono, doesn't it?
Consistent with rule one.
It's like a system that's really arguing over money here.
He's getting 300 an hour.
Minimum 300. Well, yeah, the company, he's getting 3. The company gets 5 or 6.
We'll come back and we'll say yes, that was in there.
I want to move on with the agenda. It's 5:15. Agenda item number 4, ordinance 15-013, amend the pay plan and rates of pay for non-union classified service employees, revise the pay grade and rates of pay for chief of emergency medical services. So someone from administration.
Human Resources, Chief Human Resource Officer Christine Dunning. With your permission, President, I'd like to just address both ordinances 15-013 and 15-014.
Yes.
Essentially, from an HR perspective, historically, what happened here is we had contract negotiations and settlements through good faith, and career development was built into those contracts. So when those new positions were added, it affected the pay grade. For example, the paramedic sergeant went from the old pay grade from 25 to 26. Our career development position, paramedic senior sergeant, is now grade 27. The emergency medical service lieutenant went from 26 to 28, we're proposing. And the emergency medical service senior lieutenant went from 27 up to 29. Now, what happens is now you have the EMS captain, which whose current pay grade is a 28, which means now we have a pay inequity issue where you have a senior lieutenant potentially making more money than the captain. And then it's a domino effect. Then you have the emergency medical service assistant chief is now being proposed to go from 32 to 34. And then, of course, our chief of EMS from a 36 pay grade to a 38. This ordinance 15-013, that affects one person, and 15-014 will be for 3 positions.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Dunn?
No.
Councilman Smart.
Well, I'm not a big proponent of board games. I would just clarify that the domino effect is usually things go down. This is going up. So it's kind of a reverse of a domino. Just need to clarify.
Thank you. Councilman Redder, Councilman Kipak.
Thank you. Ms. Dunning, on this, these increases, how much is that going to be adjusted in next year's budget?
If I could refer to the Chief Financial Officer, because I didn't come up with the calculations.
Okay, because I know we had, what? Jack, 10 increases?
Can we get
10 position increases?
It's in the ordinance.
15 pay plans come to us in 8 months.
Okay, what I would like from Chief Financial Office is for the increases in monetary value for the next budget year.
They're on the back of the ordinance.
It's for three years.
All of
them?
Three years.
Just for these.
No, I was talking about all.
Oh, you're right.
All the increases that we approved.
Oh, I see.
Is the CFO here?
Yeah, he's sitting right down there.
Did you?
Did you want next year's budget numbers for all past?
All the increases that we approved.
Starting with this budget?
This budget.
Oh, in the year.
How much is it going to be an increase for the next budget? And that goes with everything behind it, the benefits and all.
Get that stuff for tomorrow.
Thank you.
Councilmember?
What are you doing now?
Thank you. Thank you. As has been consistent with my position, I am not going to vote in favor of these two ordinances. Again, as Councilman Retta alluded to, beginning on July 8th, 2014, we got our first pay plan and rate ordinance before us. It seems to me if you can bring it 1 week after the fiscal year starts, you knew about it in the budget time. If you bring it 6 or 7 months after the budget starts, then put it in your next budget. So unless the enactment date is very specifically for the next fiscal year, I just can't vote for these. We've got a budget cycle for a purpose and we're not using it.
Mr. Street.
I just want to get clarity for the record. Am I correct in the instant matter? The primary genesis of this is a negotiated contract.
That's correct. With Career Development.
Okay, am I also correct that council approved the contract?
That's correct.
And my final question is, as it exists now, we have folks with lower rank, with higher rank, making less money than folks with a lower rank.
Yes, and in particular with like this, the senior lieutenant, now we can pay grade 29, their current EMS captain is at grade 28.
Well, in the issue of fairness, the issue of being responsible, negotiated contract, we support it. We agree to the contract. If, as a result of that, there's additional compensation that was warranted, it was appropriately negotiated, we approved it, and in my opinion, we'd be in bad faith as a council not to support what we have previously approved. And second, I mean, it's just fundamentally flawed policy to have folks at a lower rank making more money than a person at a higher rank who may be supervised. And that's just flawed on the surface. And I think we have a responsibility and obligation to fix those things regardless of when it comes in the fiscal, within the fiscal year.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Councilmember Kilpatrick, Councilmember Bell.
If we knew that these contracts had been negotiated and we approved them and they were done as we discussed the last time prior to July 1st, why were they not shown within this year's budget?
Yeah. That question directed to someone from administration. Want to
CAO David Grimaldi. I think it's because of the timing cycle of the councilwoman. So for example, this particular year we're spending our time in the budget, and then directly after the budget we go into contract negotiations. So I think it's purely because of the timing.
But we talked last week about it, in that they were approved and we had somebody show signatures that they were approved before July 1st. So if they're approved before July 1st and you knew that they were coming, why aren't they reflected in this year's budget?
That budget was submitted to council in March.
Yeah, but we can amend them up till the last day.
Sure, but the contract wasn't complete till months after the budget. The fiscal year already began.
Okay, but so when everybody comes before us starting in a couple of weeks, I think one of the questions is going to be, do you know that you've got a negotiated contract coming up, and is there some anticipation of that within the budget that you're presenting? I mean, how many times, you know, where's the money coming from? Last week we heard that the money was coming from other departments with not even a caveat on them that says the general manager from that other department had to approve and show that he had money that he could give away to somebody else. So it just seems to me that, you know, again, what are we going, dipping into reserves?
Well, this is a fiscal note argument. I think Councilman Smiley brought up a good point. I think it should be more specific. I think we agree, but just for the record, past practice has been that this fiscal language has been the same for at least a decade.
The fiscal language was changed after we complained last week because by law you have to have 3 fiscal years shown, which this one does, but the ones from last week didn't. The ones last week just said it, the money can come from any other department.
John.
Still a surprise.
Number 7 on this agenda.
Ms. Dunning? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Sure.
So,
because I'm no longer on
this. This is
community service.
Ordinance number 1404, just to correct the record.
I thought she did in your district. That's why you were there.
It's almost exact same language. Well, funding will be provided either through the need for additional appropriations or budgetary savings. And that was actually introduced in August and with Councilman Smiley and Councilman Cartier as the sponsor. Same language.
But the law, and this one is corrected in that the law says you have to show the impact for 3 fiscal years. My problem is that we have a budget cycle, and you know that you're negotiating, you know that some of these contracts are coming up, and it needs to be reflected in a budget or have some discussion of it, not 8 months after the fact, when we're going now into the next budget cycle.
I think that's a good point. The problem is that we have to submit a budget by, you know, a few weeks from now. And their contracts, I think they ended around June. So I think purely because of when their contracts end and when we come to the budget, we run into this issue.
Got it.
Thank you.
Can I? Ms. Dunning, I think she wanted to.
The only other thing, too, to remember that it was also stated in the contract, all the class specs for public safety and the paramedics were all rewritten. When they settled their contract June 26th, the class specs were rewritten. They were presented before the end of the year to the Human Resource Board, and then the pay plans were after the class specs were done and approved. So, I mean, we had that time where we had to rewrite all that stuff, make sure we got it through the Human Resource Advisory Board and pass.
Well, again, then maybe our system is flawed, where we put money in the regular budget cycle, maybe then 6 months later we should be able to go back and relook at that and figure out where the extra money is from within the one pot of money, where you can say, okay, we know special services didn't hire these 15 people, we have all of that money, we somehow can work this around with no new money going in, so that it's not a constant drain on the reserves.
Councilman Street and Diller and Smiley and Water and Cartier, please.
In terms of timing, the budget is presented in March. We approve it in May. They don't settle until June. So in terms of timing, there's no latitude to put that in the budget. And if you're not even enough to put the increases in your budget, then that, if I'm negotiating that contract, there's nothing to negotiate. Y'all already have it in your budget. Give me my money. That's what I'd do if I were negotiating a contract for 40 employees. So I don't think that it would be good policy and practice to put what you think you may be able to negotiate into a proposed budget. You know, that makes the negotiation process that much more difficult to deal with, because you're giving the bargaining unit, you're showing them what you already have, and that can be held against you. We use for you depending on what you put there. So I think it is to not tamper with the negotiation process. The timing here is what brought us here, not bad faith.
Councilmember Diller.
This is a question. Is council to council here?
Unfortunately.
She's right behind you.
Do we have to approve, when these contracts are sent over, do we have to approve them as council?
Council, please respond.
Carol Dolan, Council to Council. Under Title 19 of state law, the exclusive bargaining unit for the county is the county executive's office. This body actually has no role under state law. It has been practiced over a period of time that council approves the contract, but there is absolutely no requirement for council to do that. And in fact, the council's power, so to speak, over these contracts is in the budget, period.
Right.
So if you read any case law on it or look at other models, the legislative body approves or disapproves the contractual terms, and you'll even see that in the interpretive opinions of the state law Title 19 relevant to union contracts. Did that answer the question?
It does. Thank you.
Councilmember Smiley and Bell.
Thanks. I've been going over this for over a month now, so I'm going to do it one more time. And because we're on the recorded record, I want to clarify this. Mr. Grimaldi stated that the language for the fiscal has been the same, and he quoted the ordinance 14-084 under Councilman Smiley and Councilman Cartier. Please indulge me. The language on that legislation from August 26, 2014 says, funding will be provided through either the need for additional appropriations or budgetary savings. And in pencil, they've written more revenue under appropriations, right? Okay. What my issue has been and what is before us tonight says additional funding would either be found through salary savings within the budgets of other departments. That's not what is stated there. Or through the appropriation of reserves. That is not what's stated there. And or revenue. That is stated there. So the language is not something that we've had consistently before us. It may be finance department interpretation, but it's not the wording that's been before us. So I just want to clear that on the record, since my name and Cartier's were brought up. And I think legitimate if it's their interpretation, but it's not the language that we've been given to read in the last three ordinances that we've had this discussion on over the last month or so.
CFO?
Mike Coop, Finance. I just wanted to explore a couple things, especially from the last two ordinances. These ordinances are actually here to amend the pay plan and the rates, not the budget. That's why in the fiscal impact, we give the fiscal impact for 3 years as per the code. And then the finance department is trying to win and say that funds will be needed, added to the Department of Public Safety by the last quarter of the fiscal year. Because our past practice has always been with finances, when there's been upgrades, different adjustments done throughout the year, is they always try to accomplish it through the savings. So that's step number one, is by the end of this, the last quarter of the fiscal year, step one will be, is there any budget savings throughout the county? It's not going to be going into a department and saying, we're cutting your budget, or we're cutting your salaries. It'll be if there's any left. If there isn't any, the next step would be step two, would be to see, is there any increased revenues over the revenues that were approved for the budget? If there are, they would approve the increased revenues to cover these costs. Step three would be reserves, if we have to go to reserves. But this ordinance doesn't say, what's this, impact $570 or $700. It doesn't say it's coming from reserves or where it's coming from, because the initial practice has always been to try and get it through savings. And that won't be known until the next quarter. If not, they'll have to come back here with an ordinance.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, Mr. Cartier.
Yep. Just real quickly, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman. A couple points were brought out, and I think they are important, is that by law, okay, it doesn't require the council's approval of a collective bargaining agreement. However, it's been past practice of the administrations of this county to have council approve the collective bargaining agreements. These are our employees, okay?
And the fact is that it is good for the council to be able to know what we're passing, what's been approved for our collective bargaining units. But this has been a common practice through the years of this government. This just didn't start. The other thing is, it has been a common practice through the years that when there's, in certain cases of where there's not parity, which is positions of supervisory positions that are not being compensated adequately in comparison to their staff that have been either upgraded or in contractual, it's been a common practice of the county to take a look at those positions, whether it's redoing the job classification or recognizing the inconsistency, and salary savings have been utilized for years to fund these positions. I can't remember in my history with the county too many times where we had to go into reserves to accomplish these particular positions. So I don't, you know, I'm in support of this. I think that anytime you have your staff members, your chief of community, your chief of emergency medical, your captains, lieutenants, and whatnot, that accept the additional responsibility, the leadership roles, and for whatever reason are making less than the folks that are delivering the service, they're part of that service, and they're part of the leadership team, and they should be compensated for it.
Cartier, please.
Thank you. I'll keep my remarks very, very brief. You know, this government faces a number of deadlines in how we plan ourselves financially that don't coincide. We produce a budget. They negotiate contracts with our union leadership. Those don't necessarily coincide, and I think we have an example of that here. The other thing people need to keep in mind is we pass our budget May 30th. Well, state government does theirs on June 30th, and God knows what will happen on June 30th to Newcastle County and any budget year. They could decide they're going to take away a lot more of our paramedic reimbursement. I mean, so to say that we don't go through a budget cycle with a lot of uncertainty, we do. We always have. And we've had the luxury over the years, because of good management and a pretty strong economy, we've been able to have these reserves and really be able to manage ourselves pretty well. When we went into this budget cycle, we had 140-odd funded vacant positions that were in the budget. Okay? I'm not clear about what's happened with all that. Certainly, as we go into this next budget cycle, I think we need to get, you know, a much stronger handle on all this issue. But to say, you know, we've never faced discontinuity or inconsistencies in timing, it's been that way since I've been here. And like I told you, June 30th, who knows what state government's going to do to this county? Then what are you going to do?
I'm sorry, Mr. Cartier, you done?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hollins and Mr. Smiley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the CFO, because I think that explanation he gave us is very helpful compared to what we've been discussing for the last few times these particular types of pieces of legislation have come forward. But I'm hoping that we would get some clarity on this, because we're seemingly having pretty much the same debate time after time after time after time. Quite honestly, I don't see a whole lot of difference between what's happening tonight and what happened 2 weeks ago with the paramedics, and that vote was 7-6. So we get the same issue, and the vote keeps changing from, you know, 4-9 or 7-6. And so I'm hopeful that we can get a better understanding of what's going on here, because there is no reason, in my opinion, no logical reason why our votes are fluctuating to the extent that they are. It's seemingly that we are treating, again, some unions fair and some others not fair. And when these issues come before council in the very beginning, I think what happens is we may forget that we have given our approval and we've sanctioned these things, and then when it comes back for the time for the allocation of the funds, then we look at them quite differently. So I'm just hopeful that these discussions, that it's a teaching moment for all of us, because oftentimes these discussions begin a lot sooner than the period of time for the allocation.
Before Mr. Smiley chimes in, Mr. Reed, it's 20-6, and we still have two or three other major things on the agenda I'd like to get accomplished tonight.
I'll be very brief.
So be mindful, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
In reference to 13 and 14, I don't know where I'm going to go with this. As I'm fond of saying, you know, there's something happens in the air in the elevators. I want to be fair. I hope, and I had actually hoped to see substitutes come forward to address my very clear concerns with the language. It didn't happen. I'm hoping you will take into consideration. I don't think I'm the only one that has those concerns. And in the future, try to bring us more definitive language as to the funding. That being said, one thing that is relevant for me is both of these ordinances together, the effect on the FY15 budget for the county is $4,620. If you can't find that, we need to revamp more than these positions. We need to look in finance. All right. So I'm comfortable that the funds should be able to be found within the FY15 budget without going to the reserves. I would like to know where they end up coming from in the last quarter. I would like to know that when you do find them. But it's less than $5,000. So I that is relevant to me, not as much as, again, I hope you'll take a look at the concern and bring us more definitive funding language in the future.
Thank you.
Quick enough?
Perfect. Mr. Street, and then we'll hear from CFO.
You mean to tell me we just had a $100,000 conversation about $5,000?
Well, that's why I didn't tell you earlier. We only spent $50,000 on that. Right.
At the end of the day, you know, you couldn't print enough money for me to do what they do. Supervisor, I don't like looking at my own blood, let somebody else's. And so whatever they negotiate and then we agree to, I think we have a responsibility and an obligation to follow through on it and see that it happens the way it was intended. Is that short enough?
Perfect. I mean, yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you, sir. Mr. Cook.
One last thing. I'm going along with Mr. Smiley there and comply with his request. And we are continually trying to improve as best we can. And instances like this, it'll help us to improve to be better.
Thank you. And we've covered agenda item number 4 and number 5 together. Are we ready to move on to agenda item number 6? Mm-hmm. Ordinance 15-015. To amend the rates of pay for unclassified employees, County Council, Mr. Smiley.
Yes, what this ordinance would do would be any member of council staff, excluding the county auditor, whose annual salary shall be determined by the county council after consideration of the audit committee's recommendation per Title IX, Chapter 14, 1401C of the State of Delaware Code, which means they have to bring forward a recommendation and council votes on that separately. So what this ordinance would do is any council employee that had completed the step 10 would become eligible for CPI increase as county council members are. If it's 1%, they'd get 1%. If it's 0, they'd get 0. If it's 1.5, they'd get 1.5. Now what I need to clarify based on discussions with some council members, if a staff person has completed step 10 and they get a 1% CPI. The next year they get a 1% CPI. Next year they get a 1% CPI. So that's a total of 3%, all right? In that third year, another council staff person completes step 10. They don't get 3%. They get whatever that next CPI is. And as the individual staff person retires, quits, resigns, that goes away. So we're not establishing a new pay level as we would have with the Step 11 legislation. And that's all it does.
The street.
I don't know if it'll hurt you or help you, so you decide, but I'd like to be a co-sponsor.
You're already on there.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
So
we're at 6.5, 6.5 on the vote.
So this
right now.
Does not start until fiscal year 16.
Exactly.
Correct. There's
yes.
Nothing coming back out of any budget.
No retro, nothing in FY15, nothing with the CPI and FY16.
Administration.
Human Resources, Christine Downey. Just so you're aware of something, I've been council people for a long time, Human Resources usually sends out the memo in July what the current CPI is, and we give you the rate and everything, and you guys are all copied on it. So that would be why it would be effective in July. The notification would come then. You have a question?
Ms. Smiley.
No, I have a comment.
Comment.
The increase would go back to July 1.
Right.
It's not becoming effective because in July is when you get the CPI. It's becoming effective because I'm not putting this legislation forward to take place this year. Otherwise, we could enact the CPI that took place in FY15.
But you're not going back on July 1st
at all.
To give them the whole year of FY15
Nothing.
Raises. That starts July 1st,
yes.
Period,
yes.
So it can be reflected.
Yeah. Anniversary dates will not matter with this.
Right.
The what?
Anniversary date,
right.
The only anniversary
right.
date will matter is when they complete 10, then the
next
CPI that
year,
comes
yeah.
out in the next
right.
fiscal year.
Thank you for that thorough explanation, Councilman. Any
I
other
could
questions?
Go on. No.
Try not.
No,
please. No. Later. Yes. Administration.
I just want Council to consider, currently CPI is somewhat stable at, you know, a couple of percent. There's been instances where CPI can skyrocket, so I think you may want to consider that. And this is different okay. from the step 11, where it's just one increase 1 year. This is in perpetuity. Okay, this is the same thing that's afforded to elected officials. So we don't know how this is going to affect us, and we don't know what effect it's going to have in contract negotiations with the other locals. I think this, from an administrative standpoint, I think this mm-hmm. could be a lot more problematic. The other question is, what happens in a period of deflation? Does that mean the CPI also goes down? So does that mean that the employees are going to get pay cuts? I mean, I think these are things we have to really think about respectfully.
Thank you for the perspective. Ms. Smiley?
We just heard how we don't negotiate the contracts. It's not my issue. Right? It's not my issue. My concern is the staff people here. And this legislation is in perpetuity so long as the 13 members that sit in this room decide it's in perpetuity. All right? It could be in effect for FY16. We can take it back out in FY17. All right? We don't control the raises and promotions that are given over an executive branch, but we do have a minimal amount of control over our employees.
Thank you.
Now, and I got one more thing.
Yes.
If this is far worse than the step 11, like we used to say in the Teamsters, be careful what you ask for.
Any other comments or questions on number 6, ordinance 15-015? Mr. Street?
Well, we're giving what we get.
Yeah.
Consistent with the law. And I don't know why it is, and quite frankly, it's plucking my nerve, that we're responsible for doing what has to be done to approve contracts, approve budgets, and everybody gets raises except our folks, okay? So you come running to us, you want us to approve this, you want us to approve that, but the folks who work for us can go pound sand, that dog don't hunt for me. All right, and it's the second time that we tried to find a way to be fair to our own staff. Well, don't sit up here and ask me to be fair to everybody else in the county and everybody else's staff and expect for me to tell my staff to go to hell. I just can't do that.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Agenda item number 7, R15-055, reappointed Renee Jean to the Newcastle County Department of Community Services Board. Is that Mr. Cartier or Mr. Hollins?
I'll take it, Mr. President.
Mr. Hollins?
Renee Jean is a member of the Community Services Board.
Yes.
She's up for reappointment. She desires to continue to serve on that board. She's a very active member of that board, and she's a very active member of other associations in our community. So it's not required that she come before council for an interview because she has a reappointment, and no council member has requested that she come here for an interview. So I would hope that council members will support her reappointment this evening.
Thank you. Councilman Cartier.
Ms. Dugene is highly qualified, a reappointment, and I concur with Councilman Hollins' presentation.
Thank you. Anybody else want to chime in tonight? Councilman Diller, we probably should get have a meeting of boards commissions soon.
We will be do that after this meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hollins. Mr. Cartier. Agenda item number 8, discussion and vote regarding additional email and electronic storage update. Mr. Cartier.
Mr. President, due to the late hour, I'd like to make a motion. We defer this to the next executive committee meeting.
Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
All in favor, raise your right hand.
Aye.
Mr. Smiley, is that your right or left hand?
Well, I was just wondering if we could have the meeting on Saturday.
Hey, go ahead. Yeah, you'd be here by yourself.
I'll be here.
All in favor?
Aye. Actually, I was voting for it.
Aye.
In abstention.
Why put off tomorrow? You do so very well today. We need to have the argument, vote it up or down, be done. Y'all already won. So
the vote has been cast.
Yes, sir.
Now,
that's why he did it.
Anything else on the other?
No, I got to run send an email.
Yeah. Anything on the other? Public comment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn.
Is that motion to adjourn?
Second.
You got it.
Second. Thank you.